With a presentation by Michael Wiggins and his team from Little Island.
Cool. Should we use the mic?
Yes.
I should use the mic. Okay. I went to acting school, but I'll use the mic. How are you? I'm Michael Wiggins. I'm Director of Engagement and Education from Little Island. And we're very grateful to be here. We are going to take 5 minutes to do a little presentation. I'd like to introduce Danielle Lee, who is our Director of External Affairs, and she'll go first.
Thank you for having us. Okay, so some of you may not know, we are Little Island. We're located at Pier 55 along the Hudson River at 14th Street. We're a new neighborhood park, and we're still under construction. We're a nonprofit and part of the Hudson River Park Trust, as I mentioned, and we are funded by the Dillerbaum First and Bird Foundation. So what will we offer at Little Island? So we'll have arts, education, and community programs that will happen year-round when the park is actually open. So some of you may have seen what we look like now, which is above these interesting sculptures along the river. But we are well on the way with construction. Our last pot was installed in the southwest corner out of 132 pots on New Year's Eve, in fact, last pot, last day. We're doing some work on the southeast corner, which is the corner closest to me over here. Basically putting finishings, boulders, pavers, making the park more real, more movable. And we begin planting in the spring. Our amphitheater is towards the north of the slide. It's that brownish-colored section over there. We're almost done there as well. We have about 8 of the 10 tiers that we'll be putting in that space. And by the end of the year, we'll be at substantial completion, so you'll really have a sense between the trees and everything of what's happening. And that's basically where we are with construction.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, we're going to take questions after this. I wanted to let Community Board 4, I really love Community Board 4. You've been so welcoming to me, Alan, especially in Lowell. So it's exciting to be able to tell you that we do have stuff in your district, in this district. And we have a great relationship going on the second year with PS 33. We did music with them last year, and we brought them over to YouTube Studios, and they did a dance challenge, a viral dance challenge. And this year, we're going to be doing a 17-session residency, and we're also able to offer family workshops and professional development workshops for the classroom teachers, so the classroom teachers can learn and also chill out a little bit and get some rewarding feelings and enrichment for themselves. And we're happy to offer that. Daniel Remsen over there has been a great partner. Administration is everything, and so we're really grateful and excited to be there. And we're also here in this building. I was here today doing Latin dance during the Kumba. You hold your skirt with this hand, and you hold the candles with this hand, and I love the turn. We're going to have an open class workshop next Wednesday, the 12th. I didn't bring flyers. I forgot. I'm sorry. But next Wednesday, the 12th, there'll be an open Latin dance workshop here. It's a creative aging workshop, so it's for older adults. It's downstairs in the gym, and it's fantastic. Flautas and churros and tacos, and it's only like 45 minutes to an hour, so we hope you can drop by for that. Open class, and the class will be running as we go through the spring. And we have another, Sonic Stories is another partnership we have with Hudson Guild. Daisy Mendoza, who works here, has been a great connector for us. And, of course, Miguel and all those people have welcomed us here, Miguel Pedraza. So we're across this, we're down the block over at the Rec Center. And in the Rec Center, we'll be working with a group of second grade, third grade, in an after school space. And they're going to be doing something around music production and also a small little bit of rotoscope animation. So they'll have something to show. And then I have one more slide, I think. Alan and other people in this room should know about our Youth Worker Leadership Program, which has started in July 2018 at Trish's behest. Trish is my boss, Trish Santini. She said, engage, educate, and employ. Those are our three stools, and we really dug that. So we've had 11 youth workers, interns. They get paid $15 an hour to work 120 hours over the course of like 8 to 12 weeks. They're all fantastic geniuses. Most of them have been at CUNY except for one, and I think 7 of them have lived in public housing. So we found them just organically and also through our friends. If you know of anybody who should be one of our youth workers, let me know. They do great projects for us, including making databases and real stuff. And they just formed an alumni group, and I just volunteered one of our friends, Carl, over here, that they're going to do a social-emotional workshop with them. These ones at the bottom on that side, Miriam and Anastasia, were fantastic, and I can't wait for you to meet all of them. And That's it. That's all I really have. All I have to report, and we'll take questions from them. I don't know how question picking works. Do we pick or
Patty?
Do you pick?
Yes.
Patty, go ahead.
I just wondered when you think that Little Island will be ready for the public.
We plan to open in spring 2021. So one day in March, in May, we'll just open the door when it feels right. No specific date yet, but in May.
Martin?
We'll carry 750. Are we safe and welcome?
Safe and welcome?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
100%. Yes.
We've had lots of conversations about it. Lots of work was done in the initial planning for it. If you have any specific questions, Catherine, our director of park operations, has all the specs and can share them with you. But access and inclusion, making a space welcome for all New Yorkers is our job. We're real concerned about that.
Christine?
Yes, for those of us who don't know, could you explain Little Island, what is the corporate structure and what are the different roles?
We're a not-for-profit.
Okay.
So the Diller von Furstenberg Family Foundation is our sole funder right now, but we're formed as a not-for-profit, and it's represented in the corporate structure, and also in the team, in the way the people that we've hired. All of us have come from not-for-profit spaces and with social missions. So that is real, to the heart of it.
In charge of the whole programming or just the portion of the programming?
We're in charge of the whole programming.
Yeah.
We are part of the Hudson River Park Trust, so we are a public park. When we open, we'll be open 6 a.m. to 1 a.m. like every other park in the city.
Yeah, in terms of the programming, do you have any thoughts about the use of the amphitheater?
I can talk a little bit about that. We haven't got anything specific to share, but you can expect to see in the amphitheater in that small southern space, you can expect to see world-class presentations, community presentations, emerging artists, the whole continuum. And I think you should expect that when you enter the park, there will be real space for you to breathe and have respite, but there will always be something that is whimsical and delightful. There will be a discovery around every corner, but it won't be packed with stuff. Because it's 2.5 acres of usable space, it's a tiny little space. So it is both a space for rest and a space for entertainment. I can't give you any specific things right now because that's not in my wheelhouse. It's not, and no one here to answer that question for you. But when those things are known, they'll be made available.
Anyone else?
I have a question. What time is the class next Wednesday?
Oh, the class next Wednesday downstairs will have live music. It is at 2 o'clock on February 12th in the gym, in the Wayans gym. And it's fun.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, you ready? All right, next up, the Speaker of the New York City Council, Corey Johnson.
Happy New Year, everyone. I wanted to come by tonight. Can I do this without the mic? Is that okay? Okay. I wanted to come by tonight to wish everyone a Happy New Year and to say it's nice to be with all of you. And I wanted to recognize our good friend. I don't see him. Where is
he?
Our good friend, our fearless leader, someone who we are deeply, deeply grateful for, the former chair of Manhattan Community Board for Bert Lazarin for his incredible. His incredible, incredible time as chair of CB4. And, I'll say that I'm lucky enough to be able to serve in the city council and serve as speaker of the council, but for me it really all started here at CBB4 with so many of you. When I look around the room, I see Christine, and I see Marty, I see so many people that I served with on this board. I see Tina, I see Morgan, I see so many people, Betty, Gwen, I could go around and name everyone, Brett, Yoni, everyone that I served with when I was on board four. And Bert was someone that was appointed the same year that I was appointed, at the very same time, which was, I believe, in April of 2005, when we were both appointed. And he has now been on this board for almost 15 years and has served in nearly every consequential position, from secretary to second vice chair to first vice chair to chair, chairing multiple committees. And so I want to hope you'll indulge me so I can read this proclamation from the New York City Council in his honor. So the New York City Council is proud to honor Bert Lazarin as he steps down as chair of Manhattan Community Board 4 for his outstanding leadership and achievements. And whereas community boards were established in 1963 through the New York City Charter as a means for the city's governance to provide opportunities for broader and more in-depth engagement of citizens in local decision-making, the Charter broadly authorized each board to, quote, consider the needs of the district in which it serves. It is a great privilege to pay tribute to a truly engaged citizen who has been instrumental in the continued success of CB4 since he joined in 2005, Bert Lazarin. And whereas Mr. Lazarin, yes, 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 yes. And whereas Mr. Lazarin is a New Yorker through and through when he's not in Ecuador, who was born in the Bronx, grew up in Brooklyn, and has lived for the last 40 years in the fabled Manhattan neighborhood called Chelsea. With a partner in 2003, Mr. Lazarin established a consulting firm, Policy Research Group, LLC, that is involved in fiscal and economic analysis utilized by labor and collective bargaining, which has provided assistance to many of New York City's municipal labor unions. He is also an avid playgoer whose love of theater was inspired by learning about his great uncle, Louis Lazarin, a vaudevillian who once played the legendary Palace Theater at West 47th Street and Broadway. And whereas Mr. Lazarin trained as a psychotherapist with the New York Institute for Gestalt Therapy and also served as president of the Institute, that training experience provided a very helpful foundation for his work as chair. Whereas throughout Mr. Lazarin's tenure as chair, he worked tirelessly to ensure greater community involvement and participation and to encourage consensus building to further the community's goals. He has served as the Manhattan Community Board 4 co-secretary, second vice chair, first vice chair, co-chair of the Business License Committee, probably the toughest job on the entire community board, and as the head of the Budget Task Force. And whereas during his tenure as chair, Mr. Lazarin skillfully conducted 22 full board meetings, nodding sagely, while the most contentious issues facing Chelsea, Clinton, and Hell's Kitchen residents were addressed openly, judiciously, and with uncommon civility. And whereas Mr. Lazarin has mentored quiet board members like Joe Restuccia, Lowell Kern, Christine Berté, and Jeffrey LaFrancois, helping them overcome their hesitance to speak at meetings. And whereas in Mr. Lazarin's role as co-chair of the Business License Committee, he skillfully balanced the rights of bars, restaurants, and nightlife venues to succeed with the rights of area residents and to maintain their quality of life. And whereas for more than four decades, Mr. Lazarin has provided incredible support to Identity House, a peer-based counseling center for LGBT people, including service as executive director, clinical director, and other capacities. And whereas for more than four decades, Bert Lazarin, whereas in addition to his generous public service to our community and our city, Bert Lazarin has also served our nation as a Peace Corps volunteer in Santiago, Chile, and in Lima, Peru. And whereas Mr. Lazarin has truly distinguished himself in his support to our community, our great city, our country, and he has earned the esteem of New Yorkers. Now, therefore, be it known that the New York City Council gratefully honors and sends Bert Lazarin off to Ecuador. I made that part up. Gratefully honors Bert Lazarin for his outstanding service to Manhattan Community Board 4 and to the community at large. Signed this 5th day of February in the year 2020. Corey Johnson, Speaker for the entire council, and Helen Rosenthal, Council Member for the 6th Council District in Manhattan. Congratulations, Bert.
I will say something. Thank you. I'm a little overwhelmed. Most of it's true. Though I don't think Joe and Christine and Jeffrey and Lowell needed much of a push. They're not shy bunnies.
That part's in italics.
The word, operative word is enjoyed. It's work. And I've enjoyed being on the board, on Community Board 4. And everybody I've met and everybody I've worked with. And I'm very touched. And I hope to be here for a couple more years. Thank you.
I want to give my congratulations and more my condolences to Lowell Kern as the new chair of Community Board 4. I just want to say thank you all. Thank you all for everything that you do in the community. I am enormously grateful. I will always say, without hesitancy, wherever I go across the city of New York, that out of the 59 community boards in New York City, I think Manhattan Community Board 4 is the best community board because you all are the most thoughtful, the most strategic. You all take everything you do with the utmost seriousness, and I'll say that the good things that I have done, I have learned here at Community Board 4 in my previous 9.5 years as a board member before I was on the New York City Council. So I really just want to say thank you to all of you, and I look forward to our continued partnership, and I really want to recognize my staff, because we all know that you are only as good as the people that you have around you, and I am so enormously grateful and just lucky that I have two wonderful people that I think are here tonight. I have a Carl Michael Wilson, who is my liaison to Board 4. And I want to thank my chief of staff, who is a partner in all that I do and is just one of the best human beings that I know, Eric Botcher, for his Thank you all. Happy New Year. I don't want to hold up the meeting, but I wanted to come by and honor Bert and say hello and wish you all a Happy New Year. Thank you very, very much.
All right. Next up, we have a public hearing on the CB4 response to the mayor's preliminary budget for fiscal year 2021. And for that, I turn it over to the second vice chair and chair of the Budget Task Force, Jessica Chang.
Sure, thank you everyone. So we shared with you the preliminary budget. This is an opportunity for us to hear from anyone who has any comments on that budget, and it seems no one has signed up. So going once, twice, all right.
Public hearing is closed. Next up, we will go to the public session, and Jeffrey will shyly take over.
Who, me?
Hi, everybody. My name is Jeffrey Lorenzo. I'm the first vice chair of Manhattan Community Board 4. This is where members of the public come and can speak for 2 minutes on any topic of their choosing. We have 4 speakers signed up this evening, so I will call them 3 at a time, and then Lisa will close out the crew because she's the 4th one on the list. And you'll be timed, and we'll take it from here. Pardon me on the names here. Tyrone Anthony, Miriam Fisher, and Carla Fine.
Tyrone Anthony is getting a photo taken right now. Do you want to move to the second one?
Jeffrey, start with
the... Sure.
Hello, Miriam Fisher. I'm from the Elevator Action Group. I was here last year. It's a new year, new faces. I want to make people aware of our campaign to make the subways accessible for people with disabilities, people with parents with strollers. I think you've all heard of the mother who fell down steep steps in the subway with no elevator and died, and we had a vigil in her honor last week. People with bad backs and bad knees like me, I can climb the steps, but I also say a lot of bad words as I'm trying to get up and down. People with packages, luggage, this is a campaign that we could always use help and support. I have postcards. You can tell the governor we need money. It's in the plan, but it needs to be funded. You can tell the mayor that we're campaigning to have somebody with a disability appointed to the MTA board. Currently, there's nobody with a disability on the board. Any help that we can get, we appreciate. We had a rally in front of the court last week. A number of disability rights groups are suing to get the MTA held in violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. The judge was very empathetic, sympathetic. He even said, this isn't fair, justice delayed is justice denied. And then the MTA hired new lawyers and appealed. So we have a fight. We want it in writing, on paper, that it's a violation. So no matter who's in power, the governor, we lost a big ally now with Andy Byford leaving, that it's in the books that this is a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm going to leave a bunch of postcards out there to Governor Cuomo. They're already stamped, addressed. You can just say some reasons for elevators and a zip code. And I have just a couple of flyers from last week, so you have some idea of some of our positions and different issues about accessibility. Thank you.
How you doing? My name is Tyrone Anthony, and I'm the tenant resident at 300 West 46th Street, and I've been living there for about Egyptian time, 35 years or so. However, I have not much to say, but I want to thank Jesse also because he got back to me regarding the MTA issues of the Gray Line buses blocking the MTA buses, and my senior attendants who was in the building could not get on the bus. So he did get back to me regarding that and the noise. But the main issue is that it's housing. And our landlord, Joey Stucci, is not a bad landlord all the time, but there's some issues that he needs to address, some serious issues. And some of those issues is regarding matters within the building. And one of them is that you can't harass tenants and threaten tenants out of their community room by the manager. If the agent of the owner harasses a tenant, that's against the law. And I mean harassment, like you threaten the tenant to try to tell the tenant to leave their community room, and you didn't notify them that there's another activity. So that's one issue. Our elevator has been fixing. It was out for eight days. That has been fixing 46th Street. But sporadically, in this other building, which I'm the chair also, the tenants are coming to me, and sporadically, the elevator's out, the washers, the dryers are out. So there's an issue. So, you know, I'm here today to just to try to address this housing issue because he said he would get back to us in October 17th of last year. This is now February. So that's the reason why I'm here. So he needs to get back to us regarding the renovation plans that he wants to do also. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Carla Fine. I'm here to talk about something that's probably very difficult to talk about. the recent suicide of the vessel, which is the sculpture at Hudson Yards. I lost my first husband to suicide, and I subsequently wrote a book, No Time to Say Goodbye, Surviving the Suicide of a Loved One. I go around the country and the world talking to survivors of suicide loss and professionals about suicide. I'm sure most of you here have been touched by suicide in one way or the other. Since the loss of this young man on Saturday who jumped from the vessel, 17 years old, from New Jersey, Related has closed down, has not said a word about what has happened. A year ago, before the vessel went up, an article came out and said there needs to be some kind of protective plastic or something, because it's going to become an iconic place where people will try to kill themselves, like the Empire State Building, like the George Washington Bridge. As many of you may remember, many students were killing themselves at the Bops Library at NYU, who finally put some plastic coating around or barriers around. Thomas Hedowick came out and said, I do not design out of fear, and did not therefore put up these barriers. Subsequently, he has come out and said, I'm sorry for the loss of this young man's life. It wasn't a loss. This young man killed himself in front of other people. And what I'm asking for, this is part of, it's located in Community Board 4. I understand that it's part of the state, but I'm asking if there's any state officials here, anybody related to Related or anything, to just to put this up there. Because once it becomes an iconic place, we can stop the second suicide from happening. And if there isn't, there will be a second suicide. So I implore somebody here or something to do something about that, or at least get Related to answer this, what's going on. Thank you very much.
JD?
Okay. So noted.
Thank you. Final speaker, Lisa.
Hi, my name is Lisa Wager. I'm the Director of Government and Community Relations at the Fashion Institute of Technology, SUNY, just up the block on 27th Street. I'm here to tell you about a few points of interest about the college. FIT is highly ranked for lucrative careers. Did I mention we're public? The salary data proves that FIT alumni are exceptionally prepared to excel financially. In its 1920 college salary report, PayScale, which is a career compensation website, ranked FIT 19th nationwide for the median mid-career salary of associate degrees. And we offer associate, bachelor's, and master's degrees. 10 years out, associate degree grads from FIT are earning an average of $76,400. This means our grads are in the top 2% nationwide for mid-career salary potential. Both our design and business majors provide a great return on the very low investment you put in, because we're a state college with an excellent track record. Graduates with bachelor's degrees, FIT is ranked 14th nationwide in salary potential for art-related majors, and 34th for communication majors, and that includes all the private colleges. A little note about the New York Jets. A Jets player asked an FIT student to create cleats for a cause. This running back, Bilal Powell, approached third-year fashion design student and Bronx native, Yarden Sofer Horelick, after seeing a pair of shoes that she painted for a friend, and he asked her to make a pair for him to wear as part of the NFL's My Cause, My Cleats campaign, where players show off their causes by having their cleats adorned with the various logos of their causes. So as part of this collaboration between NFL and the players represent hundreds of charitable organizations, a whole spectrum across the field, so to speak, and the league promotes the causes with videos and other stuff on NFL.com. So many players have worked directly with high-profile companies like Nike, Under Armour, and Adidas, but others worked with independent designers like Ms. Sofer Horelick. Mr. Powell chose charities that fight colon cancer and pancreatic cancer. One guy did choose to demand the return of chicken nubs spicy chicken nubs I saw on the website. But anyway, this guy chose colon cancer and pancreatic cancer. And you can find her cleats from Powell on Twitter using the hashtag #MyCauseMyCleats. And I also just wanted to say that we have a spectacular exhibition in honor of Black History Month in the Art and Design Gallery, which is the lobby of the Pomerantz Building. It's that big glass space at the corner of 27th and 7th. It's called Black in Time. And it's a collaborative exhibition between students, faculty, and outside artists, and it's really fantastic. Hope you'll come by. It's there for a month. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're better this month.
Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah, I know. I have a bad trip last year. Oh, sorry.
Is there anybody else that would like to speak in the public session? Thank you. With that, the public session is now closed, Mr. Chair.
All right. We move on to the adoption of the agenda. What are we going to do about the two HHHS matters? Okay, there are two letters that we think are still coming, so we're going to leave them on the agenda. Item 15 has been tabled. Any other changes to the agenda? Yes, Christine.
I think we had that discussion before, but I think if the letters are just arriving now, it's irritating that I didn't come.
We're
supposed to have them 5 days.
I agree with you. I understand. I think if one has a somewhat of a time sensitivity around it,
17 does.
17 does.
16 was already done now.
Right.
16 was already done.
Yeah. She's right.
So. So you're moving to table those two as well.
Yeah.
All right. So let's do this by Robert's rules. So we're going to vote first on Christine's motion to table 16 and 17, which we don't have yet. Maria, do you want to...
No, wait, we have 16.
You have 16.
We have 16?
Yeah, no, you have 16. You don't have 17 and you don't have...
15 we're tabling. 15 we're tabling. 17 is the issue.
And 17 and 20.
Oh, 17 and 20. I'm sorry. 17 and 20. So let's first vote on whether we should table 17 and 20. Is there a second to Christine's motion to table them? I see a second. All those in favor of tabling 16 and 20? 17 and 20. 17 and 20. I'm sorry. I'll get this right.
I'd like some discussion first.
Okay. Go ahead.
Just a question about 20, the lantern supportive. Isn't there some urgency about that? Or is there not?
I prefer to Maria on it.
No, there's urgency on number
17. 17, I got it right this time.
There's some urgency on that?
So, if I may, on 17, the reason why there's urgency, this building has an issue that it does not have a cure for harassment. There has been a potential fire. That fire was misinformed about not engaging not only with the tenants, but not engaging with the community at large, and has been in the dark about some of the concerns and issues. There is a clock ticking on whether or not that this interested buyer who wants to make improvements in 100% permanently affordable units in this SRO can still go ahead with the project. So that's why there was urgency, because this this potential buyer could solve some problems not only for the tenants, but also be able to correct a wrong done at this particular site. So that was why there was urgency, so that we don't lose the opportunity of this this potential.
Well, then I guess my follow-up is suggesting as well, is there any way to take this up sooner than the next board meeting?
We can take it up at exec, send it, and then ask for ratification next month, but not before exec, unless, I don't think we can even vote exec by email. That's a public meeting. We can't do that by email.
No.
Okay. So the earliest we could take it up if we don't vote on it tonight would be at exec.
Okay. Why isn't the letter here?
We didn't receive it in time.
We have not received the letter yet.
We do not have the letter at all.
The copies of the letter are coming, as reported, copies of the letter are coming to this meeting.
Supposedly.
Well, then I'm going to vote against tabling this. If there's some urgency and people's lives
all right.
to be impacted on this, I think we need to...
All right, Maria, did you want to say anything else on this?
Yeah, I was going to add the fact that when we talked about the letter, we were also talking about pending what the tenants had to say, their input. And we're supposed to be...
You guys are meeting with the tenants next week on Wednesday. The letter, from my understanding, explained was that in addition to the issues raised at the committee, that whatever was agreed upon by the tenants at the meeting needs to be included into the agreement.
Right.
So it wasn't the meeting with the tenants wasn't hindering the process of the letter.
All right. Anyone else have any comments on this? Otherwise, we're going to vote on whether or not to table the two letters. Betty, go ahead.
Do we want
the two letters be separated?
Yeah, I was going to.
All right, you want to vote on each one separately?
Yeah, the one that's urgent and then this one that's not urgent.
Okay. So let's vote. 17 is the one that has some urgency to it, so let's vote on 20 first. Bert?
I just would like to make a friendly amendment. I don't know how friendly anybody is right now. In terms of 17, that we table it until the arrival of the actual physical letter.
Yeah. I think we could further amend the agenda. We could move to further amend the agenda during the business session if the letter arrives.
Right.
We could entertain it as new business. All right. So let's vote first on 20, which has no urgency. All those in favor of tabling the letter? Anyone opposed? Present, not eligible, or not voting? All right. So 20 is tabled. 17, under Bert's amendment, we are going to table it with the thought that we would reintroduce it as new business if we have it to vote on before the end of the meeting. So all those in favor of tabling with the possibility of reopening? Anyone opposed? Present, not eligible, or not voting? All right, so now with the agenda, tabling 15, 17, and 20, do I have a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
I have a second. All those in favor of the agenda as adopted? Anyone opposed? Present, not eligible, or not voting? Probably not. All right, so the agenda is adopted. Next, we move on to the minutes from last month. Does anyone have any changes to the minutes? All right.
Motion to adopt.
Is there all those in favor of adopting the minutes?
Yes.
Anyone opposed? All right. Now we move on. Brian, do you want me to wait on Gail?
She's coming.
Okay. So let's move on to the rest of the elected officials who are signed up to speak. First up is Kevin Jean-Baptiste from Cyrus Vance's office.
Good evening, everyone. I was not expected to be called first, but here I am. Kevin Jean-Baptiste from the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. I just had a quick few updates, and I did want to highlight something that's sort of developing. My updates are that we have launched our high school internship program, and we do this every year, and expand our high school internship program to allow young people to have the working experience and work throughout the office. It's Monday through Thursday, and from the hours of 9 to 4, and they get a weekly stipend included in that. And they're included in sort of every bureau that we have within the office, one of them being the Community Partnerships Unit, which I work in. So if you have a young person that's interested in being part of the office, we more than encourage you to take a flyer and have them apply. And it's really competitive, so the sooner that they apply, the better that it is. In addition, we have a high school resume workshop because we also found that while advertising the high school internship program, we had young folks that were engaged in tons of activities but did not know how to document that on a piece of paper. So we developed the high school resume workshop, which I also have flyers for, where our office, we have ADAs and non-legal staff like myself who are going to be working with young people, have them answer an array of questions, and have them put that their experiences, their activities on paper, and then be able to apply not only to our internship program, but be able to use that for jobs, other internships, and whatnot. So that's the second thing. And the third thing I have that's coming into play as well is our gun violence fellowship program, and where we hire two individuals usually graduating from high school, going into college, or already have started college somewhere in their academic career. And their role is primarily to identify ways that we can be better as prosecutors to prevent gun violence in and around Manhattan. Last couple years, we had folks that were gun violence survivors, people that had lived in a community that was highly impacted by gun violence, and folks that were doing mostly like lobbying work and some were in the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C. So we've had sort of more local folks and even folks that's been doing work on a larger scale. So we invite folks to apply for that as well. Flyers for that are also in the back. Now, the last thing I wanted to speak about was our Vehicular Violence Accountability Act, which I've mentioned previously before, where it's our office. We launched a grand jury report, and DA Vance had victims speak on sort of their experiences, survivors of vehicular violence, and what came out of that was six recommendations that our office made. Part of that was a bill that we were able to get a Senate sponsor, and I wanted to thank Christina. I don't see her, but I wanted to thank Christina, there she goes, for her advocacy work on that as well, because she helped us land a sponsorship in the assembly with, I believe, Assembly Member Dick Gottfried. So, Christina, I definitely want to thank you and the Transportation Committee for that, and we look to have this bill pushed in Albany and hopefully become legislation this session. But I just wanted to give you folks a heads up that the office will be doing some outreach with myself and others to have a presentation on that grand jury report and the recommendations that we're making out of it. So some of it is legislation, and some parts of it are sort of street design, community outreach that we can do, and other methods of outreach to increase the awareness around vehicular violence in Manhattan. So appreciate the work of CD4. You guys are one of the best partners when it comes to this, and I'm really excited of having this presentation in the next few months. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Kevin. Next up, a special guest appearance by Bryce from Dick Gottfried's office.
Yes, thank you very much. I am here in place of Matthew Tai. He is sick today. He will be back next month. Unfortunately, the DA's office kind of stole all my thunder. I came here expressly to talk to you excitedly about the Vehicular Violence Accountability Act that Assemblymember Gottfried is introducing in the Assembly. It is something, in fairness, the DA's office has been pushing for a long time. I'm glad it's finally getting some momentum behind it. With violent injuries to pedestrians and cyclists at an all-time high in New York, especially in Manhattan, Assemblymember Gottfried has joined with State Senator Tim Kennedy of Buffalo, who chairs the Senate Transportation Committee, to sponsor this bill, which will essentially provide prosecutors, allow them to consider aggregating factors such as speeding, texting, or phoning while driving when vehicular convictions are attempted. That is because right now the law only governs right-of-way. It's limited only to collisions in which a driver fails to yield right-of-way. And as we know, there are dozens of different kinds of accidents that don't involve right-of-way, but do involve careless driving. And so this is going to give law enforcement the tools that it needs to really crack down and help make streets safer. And it really, Assemblymember Gottfried was inspired to this by members of Community Board 4, including Mr. Treat and Christine Berthe, and we're grateful to them and their advocacy. This bill, he wouldn't be sponsoring it without the activity and participation of Board 4. So he wanted me to thank the board for that. A couple of other items in news you can use. We all think of February 14th as Valentine's Day. This year, it is also the newly extended deadline for applying for community board memberships, and it is the deadline to switch your registration to vote in a party primary for the presidential primary. So if you're not, for instance, enrolled in a party and you'd like to be able to vote in the presidential primary, on April 28th, you need to change your registration by February 14th. February 7th is the deadline to apply for health insurance through the New York State Health Exchange. And so if you know of anyone who needs to get themselves insured and is wondering how to do that, they should try to do that in the next 2 days. That's really it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bryce. Taylor from Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney's office is up next. And I see her making her way up.
Hi, I'm Taylor from Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney's office. Just going to update you on a lot of things she's been doing as quickly as possible. So this week she's been holding a bunch of hearings, a series of them, in the Oversight Committee on the Trump administration's attack on children. So it goes all the way from healthcare to issues at the border. They're having a bunch of them. Virginia became the 38th state to ratify the ERA. We've been working on this forever. The House overwhelmingly passed the Congresswoman's Never Again Education Act for Holocaust education. She led members of the New York delegation in a letter to ICE demanding answers regarding the detainment of a human trafficking survivor and trans man named Chin Sui. She called on the National Credit Union Association to place an immediate moratorium on both taxi medallion loan foreclosures and sales of taxi medallion loans currently owned by the NCUA. Last month, she held a hearing in the Oversight Committee to examine if the Census Bureau is making every possible effort to reach hard-to-count communities. She spoke against starting a war with Iran, joined thousands of other New Yorkers in the No Hate, No Fear Solidarity March Against Anti-Semitism, released a statement in support of the Empire State Complex and Penn Station improvements. In December, she sent letters seeking documents about the deaths of immigrants detained by the Trump administration, the Debbie Smith reauthorization passed the Senate, gun violence research, terrorism risk concerns, and paid family leave, all big things she's been working on, were all passed in the spending agreement. And she introduced a bill to protect public housing residents just days after standing in support of tenants who were suing NYCHA. I think that's most of the stuff from the past 2 months. For any more information, you can go on our website. We have newsletters in the back, or you can always reach out to our office. Thank you.
Thank you, Taylor. And finally, Lila Mejia from Public Advocate Jumaane Williams' office. Okay, then we will wait for the public advocate to arrive. That finishes the presentations. Yes, Alan.
I just wanted to thank the speaker and the city council for the passage of the payment cash bill.
Okay.
All right.
You're welcome. Carl takes personal responsibility for that. I guess we should acknowledge they don't speak. Everyone doesn't speak every month, but we do have representatives here as well from State Senator Hoylman's office and Controller Stringer's office and Carl from Corey's office, and who did I miss? Robert Jackson's office as well. So I just wanted to acknowledge them. All right, we move on to the district manager, the very model of a modern district manager.
Good evening. I'm Jesse Bodine, the district manager for Community Board 4. Here are some of the highlights of events that either I or my staff attended on behalf of the board and some upcoming events. So I represented CB4 at a press event along with our local elected officials and Manhattan Borough President Gail Brewer, advocating on for homes for the homeless. Pressuring Homes for the Homeless would be more to say, which is an organization that owns the property at 519 West 49th Street, Riverview Senior Living Complex, for them to partner with a nonprofit organization rather than just putting the building up for sale to a market rate developer. I held a meeting with 460 West 34th Street and Block Association residents regarding the new construction project there and the after-hours variances. And in addition to that, we held a follow-up meeting with the Mayor's Community Affairs Unit and their neighborhood support team regarding the after-hours construction in the West 30s. Their final report with their recommendations on this issue will be coming out hopefully in March of this year. And I attended a meeting with Manhattan Borough President staff, senior staff, and New York City DCAS regarding our ongoing office space issue. And so I can give more details to that offline for anybody. And then, so February, for the month of February, the only difference, I believe, to my knowledge about committees is Chelsea Land Use Committee will be meeting on Tuesday, February 18th, instead of its normal time due to the President's Day holiday. And just because of timing, it never worked out. I was away in December, and then Bert was away in January. I would just like to say that it was an honor working under Bert, and it was a real pleasure, and he taught me a lot. So thank you.
All right, for the chair's report, I can tell you what some of the committees have been up to. CB4 continues to participate in the Community Advisory Committee for Lantern Organization Stardom Hall Supportive Housing Residents. That's at 330 West 51st Street. That's an ongoing issue that we are involved with. CB4 members met with our electeds and State ESD regarding a new RFP for the Bayview prison site at 550 West 20th Street, and that went very well, and we are looking at ways to keep public amenities at that site as well as either affordable or supportive housing. Members of both Chelsea Land Use and Housing, Health, and Human Services are continuing to attend, including as of last night, the NYCHA Chelsea Working Group, and that is ongoing. Finally, as a committee, you all know one of my things was the tow pound. The Hudson River Park Trust is convening a committee this Friday that will meet for about 6 weeks to try and come up with a solution for both Pier 40 and Pier 76, at which CB4 will be very well represented. And that's it from the chair's report. We can move into business session, and I am looking to Yoni and Frank for the Business Licensing and Permits Committee.
We have 9 letters tonight. I will just quickly mention 2 of them. One is Pavilion Grill, which Pete mentioned that their current operating hours are only till 12, but their current license is till 4, so there was some confusion. We had to let them continue to have an existing license based on their current license hours. It's just the manager who's a part owner now is going to be a full owner. The other 3 is the last 3 on here that were, or some of them, I guess it's not in that order, 3 of them were owned by Besim Kukaj, who was investigated by the SLA and had all his licenses withdrawn, and there's a big investigation into him. We just wanted to flag for the SLA some of them, so you'll see there it's a oddly worded letter where we recommend denial unless the SLA can determine that the applicant has no connection to the previous owner. We're a little suspicious because the applications, the new owners don't plan to change the method of operation or the staff. They want to continue operating the way it is, and Besim has been seen at these current locations. So basically said, the SLA should do the investigation, and if they do, we provide the stipulations. Unless any questions, yes?
I just want to also point out that some of the people that were there representing this new business couldn't really answer any questions and didn't know anything about restaurants or bars. So we think they were just...
Yeah. So are you moving to bundle all of these?
Yes, we bundle them all.
Okay. Is there...
All
right, so all those in favor of one... Well, wait a minute. Are there any other questions before we do that? Just let's make sure. Okay, fine. All those in favor of the bundle of items 1 through 9?
Yep.
Anyone opposed? Anyone present not eligible or otherwise not voting? Okay, we move on to ACES. Alan.
So the 2 letters that we have, follow-up support letter for any space for our statement of needs. A support letter they're going to be going out, provide some support in addition to what hopefully they get from the city. Letter number 10, I was just advised of a slight change. If you had a letter in front of you, it's the 2nd page, line 22, the discussion at the committee was whether or not the city should provide a separate school four dyslexic students, and the committee, after some discussion, felt that these type of programs should be done and can be done within the local schools. So we're just going to amend that to take that sentence about the creation of the DOE public school.
Michael.
Other than that, any questions?
What's the new
sentence?
Alan, can you repeat the new sentence, please?
Yes, can you? What's the new sentence?
What's the new sentence? We haven't worked on that yet.
What is it going to say?
Programs within the schools.
No, I'm
pilot programs outside
not
the mainstream.
So it's not separated.
Not the message?
It's not going to be separated.
We're having a sidebar.
Okay.
Starting with the word including. So we're going to strike so that the sentence will read, curriculum and programs within schools and pilot programs outside of mainstream schools to best serve dyslexic students.
Right.
And that's the end of that bullet?
That's the end of that.
Okay. So are we bundling these two?
Yes.
Are there any questions? Brett, go ahead.
I would like to have 10 separated from 11.
Okay.
I have some issues with number 10. The first issue is that, first of all, this is sort of a citywide policy. We're not experts in education and studies, and there's statistics from Yale, and you know we all know that 86.34% of all statistics are made up on the spot. So I don't think we're the qualifications to really make a recommendation to the city how they should approach screening for dyslexia and other special needs. And so that's first of all. So even if I would support the letter in principle, I don't think this is a community board letter per se. The second issue I have with this is as an issue, you know, speaking as a parent of a student who has special needs, I'm very familiar with a lot of these issues. The whole paying for a special education lawyer to retainer, all that, it's such a racket, such a waste of money. But the issue I have with this is more fundamentally is it seems to be suggesting that this is an issue that has to be dealt with only by the public schools, and that the reason why people go to private schools is to get services for special needs. That's completely not at all why I'm sending my kids to private schools. It's because I'm also prioritizing the religious education with the secular education, which the public school system is not expected to handle. This opens up a whole other can of worms related to things like school vouchers and why taxpayers have to pay for private schools, but they're already paying into the school system, how much Department of Education money should be going to the private school system as a matter of course. And what this is suggesting is we need to be funding more and more into the public school system. If we want to have a funding request, we already have an opportunity to write letters and make recommendations to the city budgeting. But I don't think that should fall into this. And I really oppose the implication that the private school system is siphoning money away from the public school system because of racial exclusion for students. So that's why we just outright oppose the letter.
All right. Any other comments on 10 or 11? David.
Religious versus special needs. One is, you have a choice of doing it, but this means you've won that way. So that's why I'm in favor of
it. All right. Any other comments on either of these letters? All right. We're going to vote on them separately then. On item number 10, do I have a motion, Jeffrey?
So moved.
All those in favor of item 10 to the DOE? All those opposed? Four. There were two on this. Okay.
Wait, can you raise your hands again if you oppose? I didn't see
you. So
five. Anyone present not eligible or otherwise not voting? All right, we move on to item 11. Make a motion.
So move to adopt item 11.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor of item 11? All those opposed, present not eligible or otherwise not voting. All right, Chelsea Land Use, Betty.
This is a very
very straightforward proposal. It's to an LTC for a building at 210 11th Avenue and West 25th Street in the West Chelsea Historic District. The building had been used for manufacturing. Now it's used for art galleries and office uses. The proposal is to remove a defunct loading dock on 25th Street and replace it with at-grade doors, interior stairs, and a lift for materials. And the canopy will be maintained, but the plexiglass in the canopy will be replaced with frosted glass. We recommend that this application should be approved. It will improve the appearance of the building in the community and make more space at the sidewalk level.
Any questions about item number 12?
Yes, okay, it's an enclosure.
I'm looking at you, David. Any questions? Any issues? All right.
To adopt.
And is there a second? All those in favor of item number 12? Anyone opposed, present not eligible, or otherwise not voting? Jeffrey, Waterfront.
Hi, everybody. Two fairly straightforward letters, 13 and 14. The NYC Ferry Landing, we received an update from EDC as to how the boats coming in from Staten Island will affect Pier 79 behind the Javits Center at 39th Street. We repeated our ask of what we did in 2019 and re-educated them in 2017. We're also going to be attaching the letters we sent in 2017 and 2019 as well. Pier 84, there's long been a bike rental facility there. It's a new operator coming. The letter outlines what we requested of them. They were an excited and willing operator to listen to us, and we were, you know, wish them well on their way. Any questions on these letters? Multiple. Okay. I'm going to go around, Martin.
Yes. So on the ferry letter, I was wondering if it would be a friendly amendment to add a sentence that, based on prior concerns from the committee, we have requested ridership estimates of each segment of the St. George route. And, you know, I asked at both of the committee meetings and also followed up by email, but still had not received that information. So it's just something that indicates that we've requested that ridership estimates and have not received any data back.
I'm great with that. So ridership estimates. Friendly amendment.
Martin was next.
Martin?
I want to thank the committee in pushing on the bikes for mentioning ADA. It's impossible. You are ignorant. I can't ride a three-wheel bike. And even the blind can manage tandem. I will be going to the vendor and showing him your letter and asking them for the machine. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. He was insistent on having multiple forms of ADA accessible bikes, so
hey,
report back. There was other questions on this side. Bert?
Yeah, in terms of Staten Island,
they're not. They're moving. They're taking the terminal further to the west. There's a smaller terminal because there were concerns about the DOT Staten Island ferries, you know, really mixing with these much smaller NYC ferry boats. So this is delayed. They haven't given us a time of when it's going to happen, but they have to resite that landing in Staten Island.
But where they're moving to the west, we'll still have the kind of access to public transit.
But that's in Staten Island.
It's all one system.
The elected officials in Staten Island all universally said this is not good because it moves folks further from the buses and the Staten Island Railway. But we haven't opined on how great Staten Islanders will think this ferry route is. So I don't think we can put in this letter whether or not it's appropriate to have a landing in Staten Island not be as good as an access point to public transit as it would be if it went into the St. George Terminal. It would be us opining on a hyper-local, you know, Staten Island issue.
I don't think it's a hyper-local. No. It is a citywide. It's a citywide issue because the ferry is a system, and it's not just something at Pier, whatever it is.
Sure.
79. It's part of a larger system, and if one part of the system is not functioning well, it's probable that those estimates of usage will decline. If people can't get to the ferry in Staten Island, they're not going to take it.
So would a line like we encourage further study by EDC to see how a more direct connection could be made to previously existing forms of public transit in Staten Island?
Something about to maximize usage of the system. Ferry landing should be located wherever possible, or I don't want to fuck it around. Located at maximum point of
transit.
Connectivity.
Right?
Internodal.
Connectivity.
That's the word.
Transit connected
with the bus station.
Yep.
The word.
And
Paul.
You talk about the buses, right.
Transit connectivity.
The word is internodal.
Happy to accept.
That's right.
Paul.
I think along that theme, it aligns well with our concept of the ferry going to Wall Street, where it connects in.
Yeah.
Interconnectivity.
As soon as he said that, it made
that's
perfect sense. So
yeah.
I apologize. Christine?
The tours, I didn't realize that they wanted to do the tours. Maybe I would feel more comfortable if they were...
This is on the Pier 84 bike lane letter.
Pier 84, sorry. If there was a requirement that no tour has more than one person riding in front, you know, not 2x2 or 3x3.
Single lane.
Single lane. Because that's a commuter look at the lane. And how wide is the lane? I mean, the lane is, what, two people?
Two bikes.
This raised the most flags in discussion in committee.
So, or maybe we can ask them to come back to the community, the transportation committee, and have a presentation about that.
I'm certainly open to that.
I mean, I'm very concerned about the, you know, blocking the lane.
This was discussed repeatedly, and it's where we ask that they inform those taking the tour or renting a bike in general the rules of the bikeway, which is typically one, you know, one per lane, not 2x2.
Generally, you have a group of people, right?
Sure.
So this is my impression that it could lead to. And they're going to have a guide in front of the tour, or what?
Yes.
Yes.
They didn't know.
So we should insist that there is a guide and there is one person. It's single lane.
Right? Sure. Hang on. Is this on with this, JJ?
Legitimate concern, Christine, but this is just one operator.
Yes.
The other operators outside that we really have no control over. So for us to control this one operator is probably not advisable because other operators can do what they want. The important thing is that the Hudson River Park Trust developed some system to protect what they want.
And the Trust was keen to hear us on this issue and noting that we expect them to come back if there's any complaints to the community board or the trust as well. Do you have a suggestion as to language you might want to add, or
I ask that they come back to transportation, not making it, you know, subject to,
okay,
but ask them to come back to explain their operation.
That could be included in the letter. If you want.
We can add a line about that.
Inga.
In the letter, it says we hope they stay in their space. Can we have them spray painted or mark it so that people know?
We can ask.
Can we put that in the letter so that they mark? I mean, tape,
specifically
spray,
delineate the dedicated space.
Yes.
Yep.
Because otherwise, when I walk by and they're taking 3,000 square feet, I'm going to think, well, that looks big, but I don't know. I didn't bring my tape measure.
Right.
Sounds reasonable to me. JD, did I see your hand go up? Oh, okay. Any other questions? Is everybody comfortable taking these two items together as friendly amended on both? Brad?
Seconded. Did you throw in the electric powered ferry stuff we were talking about?
No, because that came up after we talked about it at committee. So it was passed after our vote.
Just wondering about it. Do we add that?
There's been some... I sent some stuff in about ferries that are powered by electricity instead of diesel or gas. And since we are the environmental committee, I thought maybe they might throw that in to say we prefer them to look into...
EDC needs to look into...
Because we talked to them about the motors and all that stuff and...
Absolutely.
All the pollution, just maybe we thought maybe we'd put that in.
Remember, we were uncomfortable out there. We're using the best theory.
Yes. Right, that it wasn't above and beyond. It was just the baseline. Yeah. Happy to accept. Did you make a motion on that, Inga?
Yes.
Thank you. Is there a second on the bundle?
Thank you.
Seconded.
All right. That's your job. Sorry.
All those in favor of the two items as amended.
Slow your roll.
Anyone opposed? Present, not eligible, or otherwise not voting. All right. Next up, we have one item from Housing, Health, and Human Services. Joe, we're going to take the other letter up as new business.
Well,
you were tabled.
No, not that one.
That was also
tabled. We are voting on Hartley House. The Hartley House letter.
So,
Maria, go ahead.
Do you want me to go or Gail?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. So, a brief summary of the letter about Hartley House. I'm giving the brief summary because my co-chair is PNE, present not eligible, and he did not vote during committee. Basically, Hartley House, it is a settlement house on 46th Street that's been in existence since 1897, providing services to Hell's Kitchen. And in March of 2018, they came before our committee, Housing, Health, and Human Services, and basically said they were having financial difficulties and they were having trouble managing their building and maintaining it, and that they were actually selling, and they were already on the market to be sold. Come September 2018, 6 months later, there was an announcement made on the steps of Hartley House that it was going to be saved. And this was really a collaborative joint effort between, I would say, Hartley House, the Hudson Guild, where we are now, which began as a settlement house also in 1895, and Clinton Housing Development Corporation, which is a nonprofit affordable housing developer, and Joe leads that. That's why he's PNE. And as well as local elected officials, including support from them financially and otherwise. And so the plan is that it's going to continue, Hartley House is going to continue providing services on site, and there's going to be supportive housing on site for seniors, LGBTQ seniors. There's going to be 22 units. Once the studio, 22 studio and SRO units, plus one for an on site super. And oh, what I didn't tell you is it's on 46th Street between 9th and 10th. It's four townhouses and one in the back, a carriage house. It's a smaller building. And what else is really important to know? Oh, so the supportive housing piece, 60% of the units are going to be for people that are formerly homeless, and 40% is going to be for community members at 50 and 60% AMI. And we are going to... Hold on. Historic, oh yeah. There's going to be some historic preservation of the buildings because that's where they existed since 1897. And an elevator is going to be installed. And there's one more exciting thing I can't remember. Historic preservation. Oh, did I say an elevator?
Yes.
Oh, ADA compliant. That's what it was. It's going to be ADA compliant. Yes, Martin, I love that. And it's supposed to be completed in 2022.
All right. Any question? Is there anything anyone wasn't covered? Go ahead, Betty.
Oh. Well, first of all, I just think we should be so appreciative of the committee, of Clinton Housing, of Hudson Hill, our elected officials, because I know this thing was on its last legs. They were just going to sell this building to a developer. So this is an extraordinary accomplishment. That said, I have some tiny picky things.
Wait, one more thing.
you didn't read the letter, it's basically to memorialize this wonderful joint collaborative effort saving. Saving Hartley House.
Okay. So, well, the little picky things are, is since some of the population is going to be homeless, etc., formerly homeless, is there going to be supportive staff?
Yes.
As part of this, is that...
I apologize. Supportive housing, what I meant to say also is that Hudson Guild is going to be providing that.
Okay.
The
maybe
social
I'm
services
interested.
Piece
okay.
for the seniors.
Okay. And then two other picky things. There's the pink room. I was thinking maybe you could describe that room in some other way than the pink room.
That's what it's called. It's called the pink room.
It's the pink room.
That's the title of the room. I mean,
I know, but
kind of like the blue room at the White House.
Like, you know, a hall. Anyway, and that's my opinion.
We can.
Betty, I don't think we need a map.
She said, Betty, I don't think we need a map. That's what Christine said.
No. So color coded.
And I did get a kick out of the last line that is being developed to keep the Hartley House serving health kitchens for another 100 years. Wow. That's a rather ambitious statement.
Betty, you'll Thank report you. Back in 100 years and tell us whether or not that...
No, she can't. It's beyond our term limits.
David?
This is great. It's wonderful. I think somehow we should acknowledge Frances Perkins, because she was a social worker there. She was the first cabinet, female cabinet.
Yes, and people know that fact. Thank you for knowing that.
So, I mean, if somehow we could... somehow do something to make it more... I know there was a motion one time to name the street after her. I don't know what's happened with that. I know that's a separate from you. But maybe in the Hartley House, we can make more of it prominent.
Rename the pink room.
Are you asking that in the letter?
Yeah. In general,
the pink room
that in the letter.
Okay.
On the wall in the dining room.
We got it.
All right, Christine.
So I'm not clear. The letter is a statement. It's not a request for support. It's nothing
right.
like that.
Right. It's just
it's a statement of saying this is what we're doing. Is that what it is?
Yes.
So we don't have...
Wait, no. It is a request for support. Sorry. The only reason why I'm chiming in is because, I pieced together a letter that we had written previously, which had outlined when we found out that they were selling. The ask is not outright for something specific, but it is acknowledging support, and that is in that first paragraph. It's not very strong, but it's not because...
Support of what? Of the project?
Support of the proposed plan to be able to keep Hartley House where it is.
Okay.
Yeah, it's...
So I would recommend that we make it a little stronger at the beginning, that we know where...
Okay, anyone else? Joe?
Yeah, just that... addressees are to the former executive director, so it needs to be to the current executive director and the board chair.
Got it. All right.
Wouldn't you want to send a copy to HPD and whatever other relevant, I mean, if this is going to be housing or HRA or whatever the agencies are that deal with this topic?
We can do that. We can copy them. That's fine.
Copy them.
Okay. All those in favor, all right, I need a motion to... I'll take that as a motion.
I'll take that
as a second. All those in favor of the letter as amended? Anyone opposed? One present not eligible? Anyone else not voting? All right. Gail, are you okay if I do two more?
I'm happy.
Okay. We have two letters coming out of exec, and Jess, I think these are both yours. All right, so who's letter 18?
Yeah, no, number 18 is, well, I can do 18.
All right.
Sorry.
My bad.
So 18 is a proposal that was brought to the executive committee by the transportation and co-chairs of the transportation committee, asking to do a short-term contract consultancy for a transportation safety study, using the funds that we had received, additional funds we had received from the city council. So similar to what we're doing with the community needs assessment that JD and Jessica and Maria are spearheading, and then also the tenant advocacy contract with HCC that Joe is spearheading, this would be a similar type of contract. So per the rules, anything over $10,000 requires full board approval. I think the proposal is pretty clear, unless there's any questions. What it does is basically speed up the process in which we can get these intersections redone to be safer. And so what the lag time really is this period of time when DOT has to go out and study it. And it's just DOT has limited resources and time and effort, and so this would do that job for them, and that would speed it up hopefully by 5 or 10 years, and we'd have a safer intersection. So I think it's actually a quite creative use of this fund. You know, you'll see similar things happen with bids. Bids do this. They'll pay a consultancy and go out and do that, or even private developers when they're going through an EIS, and they'll do the same thing. So this is sort of a creative idea.
Christine, did you want to add anything?
No, I think this would be great. It's the follow-up to the study we did for seniors.
That's right.
A few years ago, where the seniors community said that the transportation crossing the street was a major issue, and those net down would reduce the crossing time and make it safer for them. So they have been selected to be close to those locations.
All right.
Can I just raise one other thing that was raised at exec, that this is sort of a phase one concept, and that we did acknowledge the fact that if we're going to continue to do this, we do want to go do more community outreach and sort of like identify additional locations that are directly from the community.
Inga.
I have a question. Do we just always go to one person, or do we ask maybe three different bids for the studies?
So we've done both. We've done both. So, you know, for example, for the historic districts report that we did the previous year, we actually bid that out because that was a significant project. That was going to be a lot of money. the threshold is, to get into the weeds of it, the threshold is $20,000. So anything above $20,000, you sort of have to do an official kind of bidding process. And so, but anything below that, if you have a consultancy that you want to directly reach out to, you can do that. But we as a policy can choose to do something more involved. But with this one, we know what made sense for us was that the Hudson Yards Hell's Kitchen Alliance bid had already done a lot of this work with a particular consultant. So we knew that information, and so we could partner with them pretty easily.
Anyone else? All right, let's.
Second.
All right, so everyone in favor of item 18? Anyone opposed? One opposed. Present not eligible, otherwise not voting. All right, Jess, 19.
Okay, so many of you may be familiar as our state senator, Brad Hoylman, initiated a community board budgeting process. He made available $250,000 to our community board. There is money being made available to the other community boards in his district. So we have $250,000 to be used on public schools, parks, libraries, and NYCHA housing. The budget committee met and endorsed that we would use the previously endorsed priorities that this board set for the budgeting, for our budget recommendations. We reviewed all of those from last year and made a selection of four recommendations, again, based on what had already been previously endorsed and fit within this criteria. So that is reflected in the memo you received. And we've worked closely with the Senator's office to ensure that these are projects that will be ones that they will entertain. We put them for your consideration.
Any questions about item 19?
Move to adopt.
All those in favor of item 19. Anyone opposed? One opposed. Present not eligible or otherwise not voting. All right. I've got one item of new business that was handed out. This is now going to be item number 21, formerly known as item number 17. Joe.
Okay, so we have a very annoying and complex matter that's come to the board before West 56th Street. And the reason it's annoying and complex is because the developer approached the board between Christmas and New Year's. They've been working with HPD for one full year, HPD telling them they need to speak to the board about this matter. This is an SRO with a cure for harassment in the Clinton Special Zoning District, and it involves a major renovation. So what was brought to us was it's currently a 77-unit SRO, family-owned for a long time. The current owner has been illegally gutting the building. There are 11 tenants left. They are living on floors that are wide open with bathrooms in the hallway, and they're just their rooms, depending on where they're on the floors. And there obviously was harassment here. This prospective owner, contracted to buy the building, was awarded Section 8 vouchers by HPD to do a full renovation. No one came to us whatsoever. In fact, HPD advised them not to meet the board. In fact, they thought they could waive the cure for harassment, which during the course of a year said no, they couldn't waive it, it had to be in place. This very convoluted story was brought to us in December. It came to the Housing Committee just last week, or the week before, laid out, very complicated. And we also made sure the tenants came to this meeting. The tenants, no one knew about this whole project whatsoever. The tenants are represented 100% by God of Riverside, West SRO Law Project. And in fact, they were not like adverse to talking about this, but no one knew about it. So we sat everybody in a room. We talked about the proposed plan. In general, we're talking about preserving an SRO, which is a good thing, fully renovated, a good thing, and nearly 100% subsidized, a good thing. So that's why the committee said, well, we're going to take this under consideration. We want preliminary support for the concept. But our big issues are there must be engagement with tenants. That must be ADA accessible. The developers already agreed to put an elevator in the building. HPD, he proposed that. HPD told him not to put an elevator because they would lose 5 units. We have an almost empty building. The idea of not making it accessible in this day and age is a crazy thing. So we just said, no, put an elevator. They agreed to do that. That means dropping the entrance down to the ground. They will have security, and that's reducing facade restoration. We're going to do that, drop the entrance. And the permanent affordability is only 28%, which is poor. We're asking for it to be 100% permanently affordable, and the developer seems like he's willing to go in that direction. So we felt there were a lot of things that were, in general, a good part of this, but now we really needed to sit down. We scheduled a meeting just next week, March 12th, with God of Riverside and the council member's office, and us, and the developer, the tenants, all sitting together to start this off. We want to indicate that, yes, good idea and concept, we have to be subject to all these conditions.
Any questions?
Just one
J-Dig.
Joe, one of the conditions is the cure for harassment.
Yes.
That should be in there. That's the new 28%, that will...
That isn't a condition. That's a baseline. This was after that.
Okay.
So Jeffrey.
What does that mean?
What it means is that the cure is part of the proposed plan. We'd add a condition that's on top of that.
But the cure means what physically?
28%
of physically, 28% of the floor area of the existing building must be preserved as affordable apartments in perpetuity. Well, roughly 12 SRO rooms, equivalent to, because it's square footage.
So we should say that's all.
It's one of the bullet points.
Just to quickly, so did we know whether or not when these folks were, the rest of the tenants were harassed out of the building to make way for this demolition? Was there any building permits issued, anything?
It seems as if the current owner, not the prospective purchaser, got permits to do minor alterations.
Did
much more. HTC has worked with these tenants for many years. They got stopped work orders from the building. That stopped all this work. But even if they got stopped work orders, more work happened. And during the course of that, tenants got harassed out. The building was fully occupied like 700 years ago.
I just confused about the process of, not the process you are talking about, the process of what do we do about those developers which are, doing the wrong and harassing people, etc. Where do we go for that?
Is this that new DOB?
Is it DOB?
This is plain old DOB, because if DOB never should have issued permits of this degree.
So the point is that why aren't we writing a letter to DOB, copying the mayor and copying everybody saying you did it again? How many times have you done it? It's in the neighborhood.
I think we should do a companion piece to this, and that's more of like a land use part of it. It's really crazy that it's happened yet again. I think we should do this. Also, I want to note that Christina, the executive committee, noted, we want to put a paragraph in here about how absolutely outraged we are when HPD would tell us not to speak to the board about SROs and cure and harassment.
We have major failure of the administration here,
right.
And we need to have a letter documenting that.
We can take that up at exec.
You
want to do it in committee?
I think we already did it.
We need another one. We obviously need another one.
Yeah.
There's a new commissioner.
Whoa, one at a time, please. All right. So on the letter we have in front of us, as explained, sketch of a letter. Are there any other questions? All right. Go ahead.
Move to adopt.
All those in favor of item 21. Anyone opposed? Present, not eligible, or otherwise not voting. All right. So that's a new business letter. That's done. That's what we just did. All right.
Christine's letter deal.
Okay. So, would you like to call up our next speaker by singing to her?
Maybe I should ask Carl, who played the president of Manhattan, Gail Brewer, in our
Gail
most recent
Brewer,
production of
superstar. Ladies and gentlemen, the Manhattan Borough President, Gail Brewer.
Hey, Jeffrey, Carl.
I know, but you had a lot to do with it. Anyway, I am honored to be. I'm going to be really quick on some issues, and then, of course, we have something special for somebody special. This room has become a cot. We can basically sleep here because so many of us, Joe and others, have been in this room working on the NYCHA proposal for the developments. And I have to say, you should be very proud because the head of NYCHA, first deputy, second deputy mayor, and folks who matter have been sitting in this room 7 p.m. every Tuesday. I've been here most every Tuesday also. And I have to say, the discussion really bodes well for the community board. So it's not just Joe's others, but it's very clear that you know what you're talking about as a community. And so I think history will show, because this is a very challenging topic, and there's a lot of discussion how this project goes, others will follow. So just congratulations, because it's a really important topic, and you have done shining stars in terms of what you put together. I also want to say we met today with the DO IT Commissioner, Jessica Tisch, and she's working, Christine, on those friggin' peons. Very aware of them. She knew the addresses by heart. So I can't say it's going to happen tomorrow because she's only been there 2 months and she's trying to figure it all out. But she was able to list your addresses, where they are and where they go by heart. So I thought that was quite impressive. And also for the district manager to know, she's also, we made her very conscious of support for the website and all of that going with it, because all the boards need that, and she's willing to put some staff toward that, so that was a big deal.
Thank you.
In terms of the park and Pier 76, I think you know Pier 40, Pier 76, and all the discussions that are going on regarding Hudson River Park. The one issue that I think is interesting, you had the toll pound forever. I've been aware of the toll pound for my whole natural life, I think. And when the governor called us a while ago, elected officials, he said, nobody's doing anything about the toll pound, so I'm going to do something. Where are you going to put it, Governor? I said to him, yes. Don't have a big mouth, and I don't really care what I say. I'm going to put it on Ward's Island. Oh, I said, that's very interesting. So then I called the police department, and, you know, that was not going to happen. So we have to find a place for the toll pound. All the other discussions, I know we're thinking about it. I'm not going to mention any places that have come up because it's part of a discussion. But the tow pound is a challenge, and they do tow big things like trucks and stuff. So you really have to have it outdoors, I think, unless somebody has some idea of a building that's got like a 100-foot ceiling, then no problem at all. So that's what ongoing discussions.
Jamison.
Fine. We can do it. I'm happy. We've got to find a place for it. I want to thank Community Board for, I thought you were nuts on Bayview and saying no until I heard the real discussion. I thought you were, what the hell's wrong with Board 4? Why aren't we being informed about this issue? And then I listened more carefully to the challenges that were presented by the Women's Building, Nova Foundation, and the lack of complete thought. So I... I thought Joel was a pain in the ass on that. You know, really, what's wrong with him? I thought JD was crazy. Then I realized you were right. I just want to let you know. So now there's a great discussion about possibilities that utilize the old Y, which is what it was, and some of the aspects of that building. So without going into all the details, I know it's going to be worked on, and we pulled together people to talk about it. You all have been working on the Chelsea Hotel, and I will say that I know that Brian Lewis and all of the board have been focused on their issues, and there's one woman who calls me every day at 7 o'clock in the morning, so it would be great if you could call me every morning. I want to just mention historians. I know this is not something that's specific, but we have had a meeting of what I call the community historians. Dr. Rob Snyder is a new Manhattan historian. He's fabulous. He really wants to make a difference. So whether it is somebody who knows the story of a building, a block, a community, let us know, because we're going to be having constant discussions, and he's going to come up with some really innovative ideas about the real history of Manhattan in terms of some of the neighborhood discussions that don't make it on the front pages of the newspapers, etc. So he's got lots of ideas. Make sure that you let us know if you're interested in this. We hear about census all the time, but the only aspect that I want to bring up is the state. I don't know if this is because the governor and the mayor hate each other or if it was always going to happen like this. But the state is giving their census money to the borough presidents, not to the mayor. So I don't know why. I just took the money. But like everything else, is if there are, let us know. Alvin Rodillo in the office of Brian Lewis right there. Because you do have to sign up to go through a process to get sort of vetted by the state before you actually get the money. It's not easy. But we have about $450,000. So it's, you know, it helps for reaching out to those communities that need to be reached out to. So I just want to let you know that. And then just in terms of upcoming events, thank you, Carl. I don't want to get into the whole play thing. That was fabulous. Musical Comedy Committee Term Limits, the musical. Thank you very much. Yeah. I'm sorry I couldn't get there. But I just, one time I was a nun, and Joe was a priest. I thought it was the best. That was very funny. You know that the applications for community board are due February 14th. You know that the Solid Waste Advisory Board are due on the same day. That's all the folks working on environment. Our State of the Borough is going to be at the Hammerstein Ballroom on Sunday, March 29th. You'll get more information. Congestion pricing is going to hit us really hard. I'm for it. We ask that the committee, this committee, that nobody knows when it's going to be appointed, who's going to be on it, we have no idea. The governor probably has no idea either. My guess is it'll be as soon as possible after any election of anybody. But we want Manhattanites to be on it. Somebody who lives and works in the 60th Street area, which is, well, Ward 7 and Ward 4, because I can't tell you how many calls I'm getting. I'm sure you're getting them. About that 60th Street discussion and what will happen there. And also we want somebody from the uptown community. So we want two people from Manhattan on that board. The deadline for capital grants to get capital money is February 28th. And then we have a couple of events which are mentioned, Black History Month and also Women's History Month, which is Black History is February, Women is March. That's a quick overview, and now I think I'm supposed to give out a proclamation. Is that correct?
Gail. Hang on, Gail, before you get to that, we have a couple of questions. Dolores.
Sure. Oh, go ahead.
So, Gail, I just want to let you know I participated in the Hope Count this year.
Yes.
And for me, it was a little bit different. Instead of being on the Upper West Side, I was end of line, which was the subways.
Oh, boy.
Every single car that came into the station on the one line had at least one to two people that were using the subway as a place to sleep. We need to do something about it. Okay. If we have the governor's ear, he's giving money for census, he's talking about having a legacy, there could be a solution with the fact that on MTA properties are many people that are homeless. We need to be creative about it. I'd like to hear more from all of our electeds in being proactive on the homelessness.
I will find out. And the governor and the mayor, I think the governor has been sending police officers to try to deal with the situation from state. And I don't know how they're going to work with NYPD. That's not a great combination. Mm-hmm. So that's solution so far. Let me find out more. And without Andy Byford, I'm upset. Mm.
Yes. Jeffrey, you had something?
I just want you to know, Gail, in terms of the Pier 76, Pier 40
yes.
task force stuff, you know, the only reason the city's doing something is this governor put an actual price tag on
well,
what the city
no.
will have to pay. And they flipped out about it 20 years later. They realized their best efforts haven't been best efforts. It's been floated that people are saying it's our responsibility to relocate the tow pound, but it's not.
It's not, but
it's
not,
not the responsibility of Ward 4
no.
to do that.
No.
The tow pound is to be gone.
No.
And the city needs to figure that out.
I,
and Pier 40 could be a solution.
Exactly. So, and I mean, if that's what the task force comes up with, that's fine. That's up to the task force. I didn't want to mention it because I didn't know how people felt about it. But I will tell you, it's my impression that the mayor and the governor are not going to come up with a solution despite them supposed to do it. So I do think not Board 4, but the community as a whole, including elected officials locally. And if Pier 40 is a solution, but I don't know how people feel about it. I don't want to bring it up because it's not, you know, I don't know.
Thank
but
you.
It does have to be outside because...
It also doesn't have to be in Manhattan, necessarily.
It does have to be Manhattan, I think.
Yes.
All right. Anyone else have questions? Gail, I wanted to thank you for the help with the office space situation. I know Jesse's been talking to you.
I know that it's been talked about. Is there a solution, I hope?
We're coming closer.
We're coming closer. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for Gail? Okay, that thing in your hand.
Yeah, so I think there's a guy named... I think his name... Bert Lazarus. So what this says is that this wonderful man joined the Peace Corps straight after getting his Master's of Urban Planning from the University of Washington. He was compassionate then, and he helped others. And after he came back, he worked in consulting. He's been a psychotherapist. He devoted so much of his time to philanthropy and community service. He worked with Identity House. He is the founder of the Chelsea Gay Association, the Chelsea Waterside Park Association. And I think you know he was chair of community board number 4. He has displayed leadership as co-chair of the business licenses and permits committee of the community board. And he detailed the most difficult negotiations. I so hate the bars and the restaurants and the Black Association. And all those discussions, because I've had to do them also. Horrible. Then as chair of the board, going to head-to-head with a room full of stunned Port Authority real estate staff declaring ignoring the community wasn't an option. And he would always be known as the chair who introduced the community board for baseball cash flow. As an avid supporter of the arts of the world, he's a traveler. He has an uncanny ability to instantly read a room. That is absolutely correct. So I, Gail Brewer, as your borough president, commend the great, fabulous Bert Lazarus for his contributions to the beloved city and proclaim Wednesday, February 5th, 2020, Bert Lazarus Appreciation Day in the Borough of Manhattan. Woo! Well deserved.
Thank you.
All yours. Congratulations.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Hang on, Brian wants a picture.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Board 4. You are very cool.
Meeting adjourned. Vote sheets, please. Signed.